They'd love to at least punch one in if they can. Trips to the right, one man wide left, clock moving, 12 seconds to go. Shotgun formation. Oblad, three-step drop, looking, throws to the right, pass caught, and it's dropped at the 6 yard, now down to the 6 yard line. The receiver for the Rebels making the catch was Andre Collins Jr. So it's first and goal, Rebels from the 6 yard line. The tackle was made by Matt Boating. And now on the last play, the pass from Oblad into the end zone, incomplete.
Well, it looked like they were trying to score, I guess.
Knights coming back in right side. Carpenter shoots it wide. 3 seconds behind the Carolina goal. This one is over. Knights win it 3-0. And a shutout for Marc-Andre Fleury, the 50th of his NHL career.
Clock Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship station of the reigning 2018 Western Conference champion, Vegas Golden Knights. I have a feeling I won't be saying that at this time next year, but that's not a bad thing, trust me. We are streaming live on the LV Sports Network. If you're listening for the first time, this is Out of Line, and we are right here every Sunday morning at 8 live in the Fox Sports Cardinal Financial Studios in Las Vegas. I'm Brian Feldman, and if you're watching us on Facebook Live, you will see that directly in front of me is Lotus Broadcasting producer, on-air personality, and Vegas Golden Knights radio locker room correspondent, Chris Magnum Chapman. You can follow the show on Twitter at Out of Line 1340 AM and like it on Facebook. That's Out of Line, OUTTALINE. We try to be interactive, so get involved. The Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340, and it is time for What's on Tap. And What's on Tap is sponsored by the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Check out cardinalfinancial.com for more information. On tap today, the Las Vegas Golden Knights fourth line kick some ass. You'll hear from one of the members of that line, along with a goaltender that was red hot last night and hit a milestone. Pretty cool one. If you haven't read the paper, watch the game, you'll find out that in a little bit as well. UNLV basketball head coach Marvin Menzies will be calling in shortly. Wow, they barely got Montana State Billings yesterday Friday, by a bucket, a late bucket by Chris Clyborn. And also, UNLV's football team lost again badly. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. Alan Snell and the LV Sports Biz Minute. I didn't get a hold of Alan, so I'm not sure whether Alan's going to be able to get on the phone or not. And, hey, Vegas local reality stars Johanna Trias and Mitchell Langdon will be in studio. You definitely got to check out what's going on with them. And it's week 9 in the NFL. We're pretty hot with our picks, and you'll get them again today. That's What's on Tap, thanks to our new title sponsor, the Cardinal Financial Company, the first and only choice when looking for answers about home financing. Again, check out cardinalfinancial.com.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Theodore waits, he shoots, blocked, he gets it back, he shoots, knocked down, rebound, score! Ryan Reeves! 2-0 Golden Knights, 3 minutes into the second period.
Puck out in front, shot, score! Will Carrier, and the Knights lead 3-0.
It was kept in by Holden. He put it towards the net. Will Carrier cleans it up. Golden Knights now ahead by 3 goals with 16:24 to go in regulation. Out in front, Jim wide of the cage. Fleury holds his ground in the crease. It fluttered wide right. Dish from the right to the left and a shot. Glove save Fleury. Denies Hayden Fleury. And some shoving afterwards.
Megs, It's time for Nightcap, obviously. A cup full of Vegas Golden Knights, as you heard. And you heard two of the goals scored in last night's game. William Carrier and Ryan Reeves. And I know, Chris, you love this line as much as I do. The fourth line on the Vegas Golden Knights, centered by Pierre-Edouard Belmar, who is a great center and also a tough-nosed center. This line is intimidating. And now, Chris, they're scoring goals. Wow is all I can say.
Well, yeah, and last night they kind of carried the team. First line of Marcel Carlson and Riley Smith, they just didn't have, you know, they didn't have any points. But it was a good night for guys not on the first line because they got a goal from Brad Hunt, which proved to be the game winner. And after the game, Brad Hunt told me it was the first time in his career he'd scored a game winner. Obviously, Will Carrier, guy who doesn't score a lot, he scored his first goal of the season last night. He only had one goal all of last season. And Ryan Reeves, his career high for goals is 7. Right now, he's at 4, 1 month into the season. Today is literally the first 1 month ago today the season started. They played Philadelphia here at T-Mobile Arena. So 14 games into the season, Ryan Reeves is on pace to shatter his career high in goals. I think a lot of it's coming from the fact that Belmar's a good center for the fourth line. Carrier and Reeves just hit anything that moves. They're like wrecking balls out there. Carrier has a lot of speed, and Reeves is just able to find his way to the front of the net because he's such a big body. It's not like he's scoring slap shots, but every goal he scores, this is the first goal he scored as a member of the Golden Knights, his fifth goal with the team. Or is it six? Sixth goal with the team. He scored the game winner against Winnipeg to send the team to the Stanley Cup Finals. Yep. He scored the game winner in game one of the Stanley Cup Finals against the Capitals.
To give them their only victory.
Yeah. He scored a winning goal, I think, in the first goal he scored this season was either a winning or a tying goal. This is the first time he scored that it wasn't the winning or the tying goal. So every goal he scores is big, but what I notice when those guys score, the arena goes absolutely crazy. The bench gets pumped up because these are the guys who work hardest, I think, because they have a very difficult job. Fourth line is a pretty tough line to play on. And Belmar is very cerebral. He doesn't make a lot of mistakes. He wins a lot of faceoffs. He's not flashy. He just gets the job done. But now you add a guy who can get to the front of the net and Ryan Reeves. I mean, it's got to the point where Ryan Reeves is playing on your power play. Now, that may not hold up when guys like Pacioretty and Stastny come back. But this team has always exemplified that next man up mentality. Going back to last year, Marc-Andre Fleury goes down for 25 games. Oscar Dansk. Max Lagasse, Malcolm Subban,
Ferguson,
and Dylan Ferguson, who played a little bit as well. Those guys all stepped in and they did what they needed to do. Well, guys are hurt. Who's stepping up? Ryan Reeves, Will Carrier, and Pierre-Edouard Belmar. I mean, that's exactly what this team is built on: hard work, playing the right way. I mean, those guys they all play the right way. I mean, Reeves had I heard when they traded for Reeves that he was going to ruin the chemistry and, you know, he's a goon, and it was all nonsense. Ryan Reeves is far from a goon. He does everything the right way. He plays the game the right way. He's fun. You know, he gets it. The guy just gets it. He understands he's getting paid to play a game. And he goes out there and he has fun doing it. The guys on the team love him. Every time you talk to anybody on that team about Ryan Reeves, they just light up. I mean, Alex Tuck the other day was telling me how much he loves playing with the guy. And Tuck told me, he said, look, I told him you got to go out and score 20 goals now. And he kind of laughed about it. But, I mean, if Ryan Reeves scores 10 goals, that's a good season for anybody on a fourth line. This is a guy whose career high is 7 goals. He's going to break that. I mean, it's – and anybody who had an issue with him coming here, they don't know the game. Because Ryan Reeves is exactly the type of player you need to win in the NHL. Will Carrier is exactly the type of player you need to win in the NHL. I see a lot of people, they're not crazy about Cody Eakin. Cody Eakin is a great player because he does all the little things.
He's scrappy. He's a scrappy player.
And it's like, who cares if he doesn't score 25 goals? That's not his job. But he is a guy who just goes out there. He wins faceoffs for you. He goes hard into the corners. He fights for the puck. You need guys like that to win. And this team has a lot of guys like that. And I think once everything comes together and they get healthy, they get Nate Schmidt back. Look, they're struggling right now. I mean, they're a game under 500. they're going to be fine. They didn't forget how to play. They're just going through a rough patch. The puck wasn't finding the net. They've now scored 3 goals in 2 consecutive games. They had trouble scoring early on, but you can see things are starting to come around.
No, they definitely are. And like you said, Ryan Reeves, a scrappy player, his job is not to score goals. His job is to be disruptive, as is Will Carrier's. But they are being productive offensively, which is a huge bonus for the Vegas Golden Knights. And they will continue to get better if this continues to happen for them. Everyone loves what's going on with the fourth line. And you're right. When they picked up Ryan Reeves from the Pittsburgh Penguins last year, I knew it was a great move. And I knew it was the physicality this team needed moving into the playoffs, and I'm real happy that Reeves got the $2 million, the contract, and he'll be here for a little bit because this guy is a good player and I think a good part of the foundation of the Golden Knights. But the other guy, Will Carrier, gets his first goal last night. You had a chance to talk to him after the game, Mags, and this is what he had to say.
Well, every time we talk to you, it seems like something big happened for you. Tonight you get the goal, first goal of the season. Just break that play down for us.
I mean, it probably happens 50 times a game. So we do the same play. We work hard, get a first hit, loose puck, Bellarivo bends it to the point, get a shot through, rebound, score. I think those are the goals we're gonna put in as a four line. I mean, Revo gets those every game. So I mean, it's the plays we want to do. We're not trying to make the fancy 2-on-1s, and we're not trying to make any fancy play. We're just trying to play simple. We showed it in playoff last year. We could play that way, so we're just trying to bring that every night.
I know Coach doesn't like to call you guys the fourth line, but Belly scores a goal the other night, 2 goals for your line tonight. What is it about your line that you guys are just finding ways to put the puck in the net?
I think right now defensemen hate playing against us for some reason. I think me and Revo are throwing the body out there, having fun. It creates a lot of turnover, Pucks gets loose and chaos and in the offensive zone. And, we had a lot of scoring chances since day one, since we started playing together. It didn't go in for us, but now it feels like everything's going in, so we're going to keep putting pucks on net and hoping for the best.
This team always seems to exemplify that next man up mentality. Tonight was kind of like that game because you got 3 goals from I don't want to say unlikely sources, but 3 goals from guys who generally don't find the back of the net. So how big is that for the team going forward?
Obviously he's stepping up, but he could score. Like, I played against him in the American League, and kid could score. He's got that touch. We got a lot of depth. Like, even Lindy, that's not playing tonight, he could score goals. We've seen that. We got a lot of depth, and if we're gonna have a good team, I think that's what it takes. It takes a little of rivalry inside. Guys are trying to make spots, and so obviously me and Revo won't score every night, but it's nice if we get once in there when the team's struggling. Obviously our first line is going to start to produce. They're having so many chances, and pucks are rolling posts. So once they get going, I think they'll be good.
Is this kind of a fun game to play in? Because Carolina plays a very fast-paced game. They move the puck well. They take a lot of shots. Is it kind of fun for you guys to play in a game like that?
That's what we're trying to play. We're trying to play the same way. Puck down low. Every little play counts. I think it's the little plays we weren't making, and the little pass and just back checks. And, we had a little meeting, talked about it, and guys did those little plays tonight, and we could see the difference from the last couple games. So, yeah.
And finally, last time I talked to you, we talked about the donuts with the shutout. Were you guys trying extra hard to make sure Flower got the shutout tonight?
I won't lie to you. There's a little panic on the bench. I mean, the guys were trying harder to get that shutout. I mean, we dropped the ball last time, and guys got a little nervous. And they were playing well at the last 5 minutes. So we had a few block shots there that were big for us. And, obviously, we're not talking about the donut, but we'll think about Flower, that's for sure.
All right, Will, thanks a lot.
No problem.
Well, of course, Will Carrier and Chris, great interview, man. He is a good interview, and it is funny because those guys have to be thinking at the end of games when they shut out. Everyone gets donuts, man, right?
The funny thing is the first time I talked to him about it was when they allowed a goal with like 38 seconds to go in the game, and it was the only goal that they allowed in all night. And Will told me that he didn't know about, he didn't know about the promotion where people get donuts. He said, I heard people cheering, but I didn't know what they were saying. He goes, now that you tell me, he said, now I have to be a little more aware of that because I want the fans to get the donuts too. So, when I talked to Florio last night, that was the first thing I asked him. But, these guys are conscious of that now. And they want to – look, they understand every time they go out on the ice, they want to give the fans what they paid for. And last night, despite the fact that Carolina didn't score, they're a fun team to watch. They really are.
You know, without question, they're a fun team to watch. This is a fun team to watch itself, the Vegas Golden Knights. And, you know, it's kind of cool. They get a three-day break now before they have to head to Toronto, go across the border. Got a couple games in Canada, three actually. They play the Maple Leafs. They play the Senators in Ottawa. And then, of course, the Montreal Canadiens. Boston, a big four-game road trip. It'll be big for the Golden Knights. We'll see what will happen. But a huge win for them before a nice three-day break, and they head to Canada. Listen, we're going to transition over, as you know, UNLV basketball is getting underway very soon. As a matter of fact, they had their first exhibition game Friday night at the Thomas and Mack against Montana State Billings. A lot closer game than I think anyone predicted or thought. UNLV did get the victory. Again, it is an exhibition game. They scored with, I think, 1.4 seconds to go. Chris Clyborne got a layup from the new point guard, a very nice distribution, and actually a great play to win the game on. Joining us right now, calling in, head coach Marvin Menzies. Coach, appreciate you joining us on a Sunday morning. I was worried you might have missed the time change.
Are you kidding me? If anything, I would have been early. So
that's what I was saying. I thought you might have called an hour ago.
I did. Nobody picked up.
Yeah, I luckily set the alarm, and the alarm automatically adjusted for me, or I could have been in trouble.
There you go. So How you doing, man? Everything good?
Oh, Coach, things are good, man. I got to ask you, you know, you did say after the game on Friday, I wasn't there, but I got a chance to listen to the press conference. You said you wanted a competitive game, but in no way, shape, or form were you saying that you played light to try to make it competitive, right?
No. I got to be careful what I wish for, I guess.
Right?
We got more than we could handle for this stage of the game, you know, with playing 12 guys. I think we got 12 guys in, and obviously that won't be our rotation. But, no, it was fun to coach. It was fun to give the young guys an opportunity to walk out there in their jerseys and, you know, experience a little bit of a taste of what it is to hear the fireworks and have the officials there and so forth. So I got what I wanted out of it, but got a bunch of guys some minutes, and so now we were able to take the film over the last, you know, 48 hours or whatever it's been, and just start really dissecting, okay, you know, what we're going to do going forward. We didn't show a lot of the things that we have in our arsenal right now, and we kept it kind of black and white to you know, just hone in on some of the defensive principles that we've got to get better at. We got some great lessons. I mean, a three-point field goal percentage was horrendous, which is a great opportunity to learn that lesson in an exhibition. So that'll obviously be our point of emphasis, doing a better job. And we thought it was a point of emphasis, but obviously we've got to tweak some of the techniques and mechanics on the closeouts and the communication and stuff. So a lot of good lessons.
Coach Marvin Menzies, UNLV basketball. What do you feel the Runnin' Rebels, and this is that the fan base should be expecting? Realistically, you know this team better than anyone else at this point. Again, we just saw one exhibition game, but you've been seeing them in practice. What can the fan base, and not for the fact, not your goals more or less, but what can the fan base expect based on what you're seeing?
Well, you know, I think that the biggest thing is that they're going to see a bunch of young, athletic, talented kids that are going to play hard. They're going to make mistakes, man. Let's face it, we're going to have bumps and bruises along the way. But I think if we just continue to learn our lessons, I think even this group this year, not looking too far ahead, I think this group this year has a chance to be pretty special if they continue to keep the unity and the chemistry they have. So I think the on-court passion, the love for each other, how they interact with each other, the chemistry will equate to some good, pretty good basketball. So I think there was a lot of things, obviously, in an exhibition that you could point to and go, okay, great, I'm glad I saw this, because, you know, now we can go work on this. But there'll be other things that happen like that throughout the year. The question is, how quick do they learn? How quick do they retain the lessons? And that's to be answered. I'm not sure. So I think the fans will be able to watch that as well and say, hey, you know, we really like these kids. They're, you know, they were horrible at rebounding the other night, but boy, they're really blocking out tonight, you know, and they'll be able to grow with the team, I think, which is for the real savvy fans, I think that'll be kind of encouraging because they'll be able to see the progress.
The rebounding and obviously the perimeter defense, two things you're going to focus on after seeing the first game and things you've been looking at in practice. What positives? Obviously, John, getting a double-double has to excite you no matter who they're playing. But what positives did you take from that game Friday night?
You know, there were several actually. You know how it is. You go watch a film after the game, and you feel like, golly, you know. And then you go watch the film, and you go, man, that team made some tough shots. I mean, the other team did some good things. I know they're Division II, but they're still juniors and seniors. I think they started three seniors and two juniors or something like that. And they play their hearts out. You know, you got to give them credit. You know, going against so many different guys, they make great adjustments. Didn't run anything he ran in the game against Grand Canyon. So he came in with some curveballs, with some flare screens on the weak side, some things that we hadn't really worked on. So, you know, I took away that basically I think the individual personnel stuff, we got a chance to really show the guys where they're having their mental breakdowns, and the game slippage was evident from just our basic shell defense and guarding the 3-point line, like we talked about. But then there were some other things too. Like I thought our on-ball defense, we allowed too many straight line drives, and so we've got to do a better job keeping guys in front. And there's obviously enough talent to do that. We just got to get them honed in a little bit more on the techniques and mechanics of how to do that. We gambled way too much. I thought there was a lot of just didn't stay solid. There were times where we just got outside our box trying to make a play. And they made us pay. You know, not like good teams would do that. And even though they're a Division II team, as I said, they're seasoned. And every time we cheated, they capitalized on it probably 80-90% of the time.
Coach, where are we going to see the leadership come from this year? In the locker room, out of the locker room, last room, obviously some key players in Jordy Johnson, and of course, Javon Mooring being gone, two of the very vocal leaders of this team. Are you going to rely on the senior man? Chris Clyburn and Jakur Justin are kind of lead by example type guys. I know Noah's a guy you're going to be leaning on, but where do you turn this year for leadership inside and outside the locker room?
Well, I think the collectively, they're guys that are going to hold each other accountable. I don't think there's going to be a one guy. Obviously, the point guard is that's the ideal person. So whoever's in that position at the given time, you know, right now, looks like Noah's going to have that nod, obviously, going into the season. But when you look at guys that are on the court, even the young guys, are getting them to talk and be more engaged with the supporting the guy to their left and their right, I think it's going to have to be more of a, you know, that type of accountability, team accountability concept that I think will help us bode well when we get into competition and you're not leaning on one or two individuals to maybe to spark guys, maybe to engage them. You know, Shekna Dembele has that personality and that general, you know, type mentality. There's other guys that are can get vocal and get going. And then we have a bunch of guys that are kind of just great soldiers. So I think it's an interesting question, and I don't really know exactly who that would be outside of Noah at this point.
Coach, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but at the UNLV football game last night, fans were basically jeering, saying, "We want basketball." What does that say to you? And does the lack of success of this year's football team alleviate some pressure, or do you think it adds pressure to you and the basketball team to produce a lot of wins this year?
You know what? I think every year, this town, the way they're the fiber is in terms of their mentality. They're always going to want winning. I don't care if football's successful or not successful. It comes with the job description here. So, but I don't think you can design your stress level or your you know expectations on what the common fan thinks. I think you already have to have the mentality that we want to win at a high level and you want to go into every game doing what it takes to win, not necessarily concentrating on the win, but concentrating on doing what it takes to win. The winning will take care of itself. So I don't really know, Brian, on that one. I've never pondered that before. I guess my first knee-jerk reaction would be, I don't think it matters. I think that we're a separate entity within the athletic department, and we're still part of the same family, and we're pulling for those guys on a regular basis, and but it's you know, we don't run anything that they run. We don't practice what they practice. We're indoors or outdoors. It's a different sport altogether. So we organize and prepare differently. So it's you know, it's just a separate box that I can't control, that I'm not concerned with, other than pulling them, supporting them as you know, partners as being rebels. But you know, I feel for those guys because you know, I watched the game last night, and man, they're fighting and they're clawing, and then you know, and then just there's one little bump or one little hiccup, you know, at every given moment that just kind of, you know, makes the hole a little bit deeper. And they went against a really, really good team. And that team's 8-1 and you know, top 25 in the country. And people can say what they want, that they went against a really talented team last night. And you know, their challenges are real. Their injuries are real. And you know, you can't blame it on any one thing. But you know, I'm in full support of those guys, which I think our city needs to be. I mean, you can't be a real fan unless you kind of go through the tough times sometimes. And at least in my opinion, you know, and I'm hoping that we don't have many more tough times here with basketball. I'm hoping things start to get brighter and brighter and brighter. And I think that this particular team will show some of that.
Coach, two more questions for you. We are talking to Coach Menzies, UNLV's men's basketball coach. Coach Desiree Raid Francois, what has she related to you? Is there anything? Has she given you a number of games? Do you feel that this year there has to be production by the basketball team more so than last year?
You mean for job security?
Correct, of course. You know I got to ask that question, Coach.
You can ask me that every day, bro. Not even me. No, we haven't had that conversation.
Yeah, I figure, you know, right now, I mean, you want to see wins. Like I said, the football program is struggling, and people are now looking forward to the basketball program. And, Coach, last question. You know the show's called Out of Line, so I'm not doing my job if I don't get out of line. I got to ask you for your recipe for oxtail, man. Coach Menzies might make the best ossobuco. Oh, man, are you kidding?
I'm sorry. That's a family recipe that goes back so far. My mom would kill me if I give that up.
Coach, all I got to tell you.
Now, my gumbo recipe, I may give you one day, but it's too complicated to do in a segment. I might have to write that down.
Well, you can write it down. Coach, I'll tell you, if things don't work out in basketball, there is no question about it, you might have the best barbecue in the country.
My guy, I appreciate you, brother.
All right, man. Coach Marvin Menzies.
But anytime. Mind you want me to come on, I'd be more than happy.
Oh, we appreciate you, my friend. Coach Marvin Menzies, UNLV starts up. It's right around the corner, man. Get your tickets now. And we're looking forward to seeing you play this year, Coach. And hopefully we'll see an improved and a better UNLV basketball team.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Saturday night, we got 7 o'clock. We got Loyola Marymount out of California coming in. So we appreciate all the support.
We'll be out there. Coach Marvin Menzies, listen, overdue for a break. This is Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio. We'll be right back.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it's a fact. After last night, UNLV's football team has given up over 40 points in all five Mountain West Conference games. All losses, their overall record, 2-7, and there's a pretty good chance they won't win another game this season. This was supposed to be an improved team sporting a new defensive coordinator in 2018. What it has been nothing short of an embarrassment. Chris, you've been doing the pregame show. You've been part of UNLV. You're an alumni from UNLV, for God's sakes. You know, what this reminds me of, Chris, is Menzies just said it. He said that they start off with good intentions, they'll play tough at the beginning, and then they start sinking. And you know what it reminds me of? Do you remember what Keanu Reeves said his biggest fear was in the movie The Replacements? Quicksand. Something goes wrong, and you start sinking deeper and deeper to the point where you feel completely helpless, and then you suffocate. That's UNLV football to a T.
Yeah, I think that's probably a pretty good... you know, a pretty good. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. I got some extra people.
We
in the
got
studio
some people
today,
in the studio.
So
we'll have to film off an analogy.
There's a reason my ugly ass stays behind a mic in the radio studio and not in front of a camera. But yeah, you know, I think that's a pretty good analogy because the team last night was always going to be a tough game, no matter who was playing quarterback. The problem is, The defense just doesn't seem to ever be able to step up when they need to step up. I mean, they played good in the Arkansas State game, and the offense kind of let them down a little bit in that. But outside of that game, there really wasn't one moment where you said, yeah, you know what, this defense is better, they're improved. I mean, look, the reality is I know a lot of people are calling for Tony Sanchez to be fired. I don't know if he should or he shouldn't. It's not my decision to make. I have an opinion on it. I don't think he should be fired. But again, it's not my decision. I like Tony Sanchez. I do think he's got the best intentions of this program and the school and the city in his heart when he goes out there. Look, Tony Sanchez doesn't go out there and intentionally get out coached, or he doesn't go out there and intentionally put guys. And I think that's the thing. Fans, I think a lot of times they just think these guys are robots. And, you know, there's a lot going on with this school, and it begins and ends with a lack of support, I think, from the community. And I'm not going to call people out and say, look, you need to be involved, because the reality is the last 25 years, outside of one or two seasons, the program really hasn't given the community anything to get behind. And I don't know, it's what comes first, the chicken or the egg? And the reality is the school needs to invest
in the chicken
program.
Laid an egg and got hit by a car.
Well, the problem
okay,
is,
that's what the hell happened at UNLV.
The school, going back to before the days of John Robinson, they have never fully committed into football. And now you're in a situation where you had a big donor say, look, you only have, what, two or three big donors? And there's no one else who's ever stepped up. MGM has never stepped up and said, you know what, we're going to get behind UNLV football.
Finley, right? Fertitta, you've got a
couple of Boyd, Finley, Fertitta,
that's
right?
It.
Outside of those
that's
names,
it.
Who else is involved in UNLV?
Canes.
Yeah, but that's small time. I mean, they're not donating.
And they're not. They're donating chicken.
So
okay, that's what they're giving.
Yeah.
The players eat chicken thanks to Canes
after the games.
After
right?
the games,
but,
that's it.
But like the thing is, we have a lot of families who are behind the basketball program.
Yeah.
You know, there's one that's on the giant practice facility, and I don't know if those people have ever been involved in football, but their name isn't on anything associated with the football program. The Fertittas, the tennis courts on campus are named after them, so they're not just football. You know, they're involved in other stuff. The reality is the community needs to get behind the program, and the school needs to step up to the plate and invest. I mean, think about this. And Ed Graney, who I love, he's a great guy, good friend of mine. He wrote an article about the four. He tweeted out yesterday, this school has three buildings on campus that are not finished. You're going to build a football facility on campus, and you're going to leave the second floor open?
Open.
If I'm San Diego State, or if I'm Fresno State, or if I'm Utah State, or if I'm anyone else in this conference, when I'm recruiting the same guys UNLV's recruiting...
Not taking them to the second floor, are you?
When I'm recruiting those kids, I'm using that as a punchline.
Right?
Like, look... You know what? This school cares so much about football that they have an open second floor in their facility.
Yeah.
Come to Fresno, we care about football. Come to San Diego State, we play in an NFL stadium. The reality is they've never fully invested in the program. And it's sad because there's a lot of good players in this city. Bishop Gorman is a factory.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a quarterback now who is the all-time leading passer in the state of Nevada high school football in Kenyon Oblad.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of kids who grow up going to UNLV football games because it's cheap and it's fun entertainment for them. I don't want to say it's a gold mine because it's not. But I grew up not far from Temple University, and Temple was a disgrace. They were an absolute disgrace of a football program. When they moved into Lincoln Field, where the Eagles play, they made an investment into football. They said, you know what? We're going to play in this NFL stadium that's state-of-the-art. We need to commit. They went out and hired Al Golden. Now, the 10 years before Al Golden was their coach, they averaged 2.3 wins per season. Al Golden was hired 12 years ago. They've won 80 games since then. It's a pretty big jump.
Chris, I'll tell you this much. The key is going to be, and everyone keeps asking me, is Tony Sanchez going to retain employment next year? And here's the deal. I'm going to tell you, people, they're only going to win two games. They're not going to beat San Diego State. They're not going to win in Hawaii because they all go on vacation when they go to Hawaii. And they're not beating Reno. I don't care if the game's here. Although I said earlier they would beat Reno. That's the one game I think they could win, only because it's such an emotional game. It's the last game of the season. It'll be senior night. But I'm telling you this right now. Here's why Tony Sanchez won't get fired. There are 900,000 reasons why. And they their dineros. There's no way they're going to honor this guy's contract, and they have to, and pay him $900,000 and then try to pay someone else to come in.
Well, but not only that, but you have to pay his assistants.
You have
as
to
well.
Pay his assistants also. But here's the deal. Desiree Reed Francois is under the gun right now. She didn't hire Sanchez. She didn't hire Menzies. And yet she is responsible for the programs. And she's got to make a decision. But here's the deal, people. If you don't think UNLV can ever get a head football coach, you're wrong. And here's the reason I say that you're wrong. The facility will eventually get done. You've got an NFL stadium being built here and an NFL franchise coming here in 2 years. If you can't entice a good college football coach to move to Las Vegas, the city that never sleeps, Sin City, and get to coach in an NFL stadium and turn a program completely around, it's lucrative. But Chris, you said the magic words. Money. They've got to get loose in the purse strings. Go to some other alumni. Have fundraisers. Do whatever the hell you need to do. You got to get a good coach here. You can't promote a great high school coach and think he's going to be a good D1 coach. We saw that with Jerry Faust years ago at Notre Dame. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. It didn't here. Sanchez is a deer in headlights. I love the guy as a person, but call it what it is. The guy is getting out-coached in every game, and the second half is indicative of a good program. In the second half of every game, this team loses. They got beaten by Prairie View by a point in the second half. That is coaching, Chris. Period. Well, end of story.
Well, and here's the other thing. The university, they need to step up and say, you know what, we're going to find the money to finish this second
Absolutely.
Floor. Absolutely. There's no reason why that second floor of the Fertitta complex should go. Look, Fertitta's gave you a ton of money. It's inexcusable to not at least come up with some money on your own to finish that. I mean, it's a state-of-the-art facility. It's a game changer for UNLV, just like the Mendenhall Center was for the basketball program. You don't go to any school in the Mountain West Conference and they have a basketball facility like the Mendenhall Center. Well, I don't know if it's coaching. I don't know what it is. What I do think is that there's no commitment from the school, and that's not on Desiree Reed Francois. That's on the administrative side of things. That's on the president. That's on the Board of Regents. That's on the people who make the decisions at UNLV who are not involved in athletics. Desiree Reed Francois can only do so much. It's up to the president.
I'm not blaming her, Chris.
No, I'm not saying, blaming her at all.
I am saying she, though, will start getting the blame if she doesn't at least look like she's doing something to correct it.
Yeah.
You can't leave coaches in place that are subpar. Whether you hired them or not, you are now in charge. Do your job or find another one. It's that simple. Listen, I don't want to keep everyone waiting. We got a full studio of people here. And you know what? When UNLV football gives me a better product, I'll spend more time on my show talking about them. And that's where I'm going to leave it right there. Right now, we're going to switch over. I've got some local people from here in Las Vegas that are reality television stars and some wild stuff. I caught a little bit of it. I actually watched a promo on it that Sabrina Chapman sent me to check out with these guys. And the show is really, really cool. It's on the History Channel Wednesday nights. It is called Forged in Fire, Knife or Death 2. And one of the people in my studio has already competed on it. Johanna Trias has already done it. And I saw her, like, wielding this sword, Chris, that's, like, bigger than me and you put together.
Well, I know.
And, like, hitting things with it. And she weighs all of, like, 90 pounds, dude.
I know a couple weeks ago they were down at the Cosmopolitan and they were cutting pineapples off the heads of people. So, you know, that's pretty cool stuff. I like pineapple. I'm not sure I'd let one get cut off my head. I'd be like, you know what? I want to eat that pineapple. But.
Well, her boyfriend's also here with her, and that is Mitchell Langdon. He's getting ready to we're going to see a series of him real soon, like as early as like November 11th coming up. Tell me what got you guys interested in this, because I'm watching it, and I got to tell you, you guys are good-looking, normal people, but when I watch the episode, Joanna, you look insane. Okay? I mean, I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, we try to be normal.
That's her on her off hours. Yeah.
So what got you into this? And, I mean, when they say forge, you're not making the sword and using it, right?
No.
You don't have to forge it.
No.
Okay, good. I was scared about
Forged
that.
In Fire.
Not yet. I'm going towards that angle, though.
You want to learn how to... Do you know how to do that now?
I do know how to do that, but I haven't...
We have a couple of swords in the Philippines, but we don't do it yet.
And I'm sitting within striking distance of both of you, so I piss either one of you off. Let me know right away.
Right.
I don't think you're packing, but you just never know.
Just don't come up to me in my car when I'm parked, I'm packing with swords.
I will be texting way before I approach. So, again, how did you guys get into this?
She's a martial artist from way back, and I'm just, in the last few years since I've met her, professionally starting to get into it as far as being professionally instructed, doing immersion instruction in country, like in the Philippines, here in the United States.
He's a military vet.
I'm a military vet. I have a background in the love of weapons and the art of war, so that's pretty much...
I'm going to move a little farther away, Chris. Should I get a little back up?
She kind of shaped my life, but, you know, we're really well known in the survival and preparedness circles, especially, you know, the hardcore wilderness survival. That's what we're really known for. We own a retail store. We own two retail stores, Nomad Tactical and Survival, and I own Desert Nomad Tactical and Survival.
Well, you guys were on Men, Women, and what not? Men, Women, Wild?
Men, Women, Wild.
On Discovery Channel, right?
It was a 7-episode awesome show that we showed.
You guys were nuts on that show, too.
We were showcased in 7 episodes.
We were
episodes
dropped in Morocco for over three weeks.
For over a month.
We had to live off the land.
We had to go from point A to point B basically with nothing except one of my famous blades. And we made it all the way to the end. A lot of couples didn't. But we went all the way, as we always do.
Did you use your blade for food?
Oh yeah,
you did.
Oh yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can look it up online. Don't get scared. But she's nuts on that show.
I saw her on the other one. On the recent one,
if you think the knife one is wild, you should check her on Men, Women, Wild.
If you're looking at Facebook Live, check these two out. It's like the nicest couple in the world. You walk up to shake their hand, and you'd get your hand and your head chopped off simultaneously. crazy.
Because I'm so petite, I'm 5 feet tall. I carry the biggest swords and knives, and Mitchell,
walks small and carry a big sword, right?
Yeah.
He's competing with something a lot smaller.
I'm competing with a traditional Philippine martial arts blade. They call it the headhunter's blade out there in Leyte Island, Philippines. And I know how to use it, and I'm very, very proficient with it. And it may not be like the craziest, most, out of this world barbarian sword like you're going to see on that show a lot of these guys doing, but I'm very fast and very deadly with it. So it's going to surprise a lot of people, and that's what I like doing.
That is really cool. So that's what we're going to see coming up here in a week.
You're going to see me doing some chopping action, some cutting action, some martial arts maneuvers on that show. And you could check Joanna out already. I'm sure
I'm in season two.
She's in season two.
She was on earlier in October, just earlier last month.
Right, October 10th. But you can look it up online and
check it out. So what's the ultimate prize is like 20 grand, right? If you win this thing?
20 grand to go all the way. You watch my episode, you're going to see me go pretty far. You're going to enjoy it.
That's cool.
Our episode, we've got some real beasts on my episode. It's a special episode. They're going to definitely gear it towards veterans. And everything else is kind of a secret. They won't even let me know.
It's a
special, and it's going to be an awesome show. And to those people that are like saying, oh, man, this show needs more action. You guys have been watching the episodes recently. Just hang in there. Watch my episode. When you see it, you'll see me on the commercials or whatever. We'll put it on social media. The folks here in Vegas, you'll see it on media. Wait and see my episode.
We're on Facebook and Instagram.
Go ahead. Give all that information out. Where can they find you?
All right. Joanna Trias, Joanna Trias, Trias. Mitchell's online.
On your Facebook. I use her social media. Just hang in there. If you're bored with these episodes that are right now, I promise you will not be when you see me and mine.
I'm psyched to see it again. Okay. It is Joanna Trias and Mitchell Langdon, stars of... Forged in Fire, Knife of or Death, Part 2. You're going to see the second season.
Season
2. You're going to see Mitchell coming up here real soon. You can check Joanne out again. She was on the October 10th episode. Really appreciate you guys
coming. Thank you for having us.
We love representing the great Las Vegas.
That's awesome. Listen, we're going to take a real quick break. We will come back, and it's time for our NFL Picks of the Week. Magnum finally got one wrong last week, but I hope we're going to get back on the winning track this week. Thanks again. We are Fox Sports Radio. We'll be right back. I like it, man. You got some good rock and roll music going. I don't know what it is, but I like it.
The Far Side, Bay Area, old school hip hop.
Man, yeah. It is some good stuff. Got my ears hopping on a Sunday morning. Well, it's that time again. Week 9 in the National Football League. It still looks like the Los Angeles Rams and the Kansas City Chiefs are on a collision course for the Super Bowl. But again, please don't count out Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Bill Belichick always finds a way as the season wears on. And for those of you, the Raiders are coming to town in 2 years. Hopefully they'll still be a professional football team by then if John Gruden doesn't completely destroy everything that Jack Del Rio built. Yes, I said it. Okay, Chris, week 9, last week you cost me. I don't know. Here's my ticket right here to prove it. See it on Facebook. I decided to go with all of our picks because we've been so hot. I picked the Packers giving up 8. Yeah, they stayed within 8. Caleb Herring picked the New Orleans Saints, giving a point on the road in Minnesota. Hell of a prediction. Caleb, you got it. And Chris Chapman took the Cincinnati Bengals, the hottest guy in here, giving up 3.5 points. And they win by 3. I'm sick to my stomach. Well, a half a point cost me $175.
Well, you got to tell the whole story, too. The Bengals were up in that game
24 to 7. Yeah,
and then
21 points up.
The Buccaneers benched famous Jameis, Mr. Crableg himself.
Yeah.
And then they bring in Fitzmagic, and all of a sudden the game looks like it's going to overtime. And somehow Cincinnati goes down the field, getting field goal range, and at the buzzer, Randy Bullock kicks a very long field goal to win the game for the Bungles. And
fear the beard. Fear the beard.
Oh, jeez. I was sick to my stomach as well.
Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, maybe the most famous journeyman in the history of the National Football League. When his career's all said and done, he may very well go down as that. This guy shows up places, has like 4 games that are ridiculous, commands a big contract, and then starts laying eggs all over the NFL. Never seen anything like it, but that's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Mags, I'll tell you right now, Caleb decided the Saints did him so good last week that he's going with the New Orleans Saints, getting a point at home from the Rams. I got to tell you, I like this. I'm not taking it, but I do think the Rams get their first L this week in New Orleans. Drew Brees has that team clicking in all cylinders, and I could see this being a preview of the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, I like the Saints as well. I mean, I'm not going to take them because I can't take the same game as Caleb. I don't like the Saints today. But overall, I do like the Saints. I think they've got a pretty good team. The defense has improved. But I think the Rams are, I don't know how you go against them until they lose.
They're going to lose today.
But if you're asking me my bet, I'm going to go with the Texans.
I like that bet.
They're getting 1.5 at Denver. Something just doesn't seem right to me. I mean, Houston's playing really good football. They clearly are the best team in the AFC South.
The RJ's got them getting a point.
All right. Well, I'll take the point. I think they went outright. I don't think. Okay. I think Denver is, there must be something there that I don't know about for Denver to be favored in that game. Maybe just because they're home, but I think the Texans are going to win that one.
Okay, and I'm going to keep it simple. I'm going with a team that I absolutely despise. Every time I bet on them, they screw me. I think the NFC East is the worst division to bet on in the NFL, but I'm going to take the Washington Redskins at home against the Atlanta Falcons. They're giving up 1.5. Matty Ice and the Falcons suck. Don't get hooked on them. That's it. We're here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, home of the reigning Western Conference champion, Vegas Golden Knights. Want to thank everyone, Marvin Menzies, Jordan, well, we didn't get to Jordan Caroline, but William Carrier and Joanna Trias and Mitchell Langdon for coming in. Sabrina Chapman's here. So is Shelby. We appreciate you all being in the studio. Chris Magnum Chapman for Man in the Wheels of Steel. I'm Brian Feldman. I'm out of breath and I'm out of time. This is Out of Line. We'll see you next Sunday.